This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's hour number two of Cashing Out right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Great to be joined by this man on the Progressive Guest Line as we've got Sean Cirillo aboard. He does a tremendous job over at Action Network, taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of baseball. Also, I have to give credit where it is due. He does a great job in the fight game, taking a look at UFC action as well. And Sean, it's great to get you aboard. Thank you.
Yeah, Greg, thank you for having me. Always happy to join you and talk some baseball. We were just chatting about the very lovely Colorado Rockies, who I'll be seeing in person on Sunday. I'll be at the Mets-Rockies game. So looking forward to the Mets hopefully beating up on one of the most atrocious teams I've ever watched. And I took the Mets in a sweep pool this week as well. You have to pick one series every week, three games, second, third, fourth game of a four-game series, or just one three-game series. And the Mets against the Rockies at home. I had the choice of the Mets against the White Sox or the Mets against the Rockies. I chose Mets versus Rockies. So feeling pretty good about my sweep pool chances this week as well.
Yeah, if you're just picking the sweep against a team that's facing the Colorado Rockies, you're doing quite good this year. And I've been asking this on the show all night. How do we fade the Colorado Rockies? Because you're actually, if you're laying these like minus 350, minus 380 money lines, you're actually still making money because the Rockies are that bad. But I understand a lot of people don't want to do it. But you discovered something that I'm currently seeing on DraftKings in terms of over-under for the amount of wins for the month. Right now, the Rockies is set at 8.5 for the month of June, and we both chuckled and we both think that this is way too high. So I'll give you the floor here as to just how ridiculously high this sounds for the Colorado Rockies this month.
Yeah, Jed, I'll give credit to Jeff Schwartz. He was the one who brought this up to me earlier when I was on the network. But just looking at their schedule for the month of June, their home games are against the Mets, the Giants, the D-backs, and the Dodgers. Their away series are at Miami, so sure, maybe they get a couple wins there. At Atlanta, four at Washington, and then three at Milwaukee. Where are they getting to nine wins from and doubling their season-long actual win total in June? I don't really see it. The pitching especially is absolutely disastrous. I like Chase Dolander. He's on the IL currently. So, you know, even your best starter, or what I perceive as their best starter, is not there at the moment. Yeah, this Rockies team is an absolute disaster. In terms of fading them, it's really finding games where I'm comfortable betting their unders. If they have a starter on the mound who I think can be functional in a road environment that is not at Coors Field, sometimes at Coors Field, depending on the weather, but more often than not, Dolander on the road, and in particular for tomorrow, Carson Palmquist on the road. I think Palmquist actually has a plus sinker, a plus slider, and can potentially be an effective major league pitcher. Projections don't necessarily see that right now. His command is very wonky. He's probably going to walk a bunch of guys. But his strikeout rate was about 31% through the minor leagues. The stuff is there. Just a matter of him refining it. But I did bet the under 8.5 between the Mets and the Marlins. I like that down to about 8 at minus 105 for Sunday. Not going to be betting unders when, you know, guys like Antonio Senzatella are starting. But I do think Palmquist has at least a decent amount of upside.
You're taking the same approach that I am. You actually can find a little bit of value on the Colorado Rockies unders. Darn near 60% of their games have gone under. You don't want an under in an Antonio Senzatella game. The guy is quite literally a human pinata, giving up 15 hits per 9 innings. So don't do it when Antonio Senzatella is on the bump. But some of these other guys, because the Rockies simply can't score, you can find a few unders there. But this is one that I know that you're taking a look at in terms of an under, as you've got the San Francisco Giants and the Miami Marlins. I know that you mentioned this game in passing. Right now, that total, you're finding it in a lot of places at an 8, Hayden Birdsong versus Ryan Weathers. Take me through this one, because I've been a big stand for Hayden Birdsong. I'm glad that he's getting another starting opportunity, and Ryan Weathers has been the Marlins' best pitcher thus far this season.
Ryan Weathers looks absolutely electric. His velocity is way up. The pitch modeling metrics look phenomenal this season. He was throwing 95.9 last year, which was a career high. He's up to 97.5 this season. And the slider is up a similar amount, up from 82.9 to 84.7. So the stuff plus is at 110. The pitching plus rating is at 120. That is ace level territory. A 2.6 body ERA, even in a limited sample, those numbers are pretty indicative of what we can expect from Ryan Weathers going forward. I think he is a number one or number two level starting pitcher, and the Marlins are probably going to get quite a haul when they trade him somewhere down the line. They seem to be pretty good at pitching development overall. Keeping those guys healthy has been the issue, but You mentioned Birdsong. I like Birdsong. Really good changeup. 130 stuff plus on the changeup. Has a good fastball to go with it. And the Giants have, for my money, maybe the best bullpen in baseball. Randy Rodriguez, I think, is the best reliever in baseball. He's the only guy who they had to throw today. He only went an inning. So their bullpen should be fully locked and loaded, even behind Birdsong tomorrow. Top three in both expected FIP. I mean, strikeout minus walk rate. It's an elite bullpen. What really, I think, pushes me to the under, and I've been on the under in all three games in this series, both of these offenses are not very good, and both of them have been pretty cold of late. The Giants, basically, however you split up the season, have been a bottom 10 offense. And over the past 2 weeks, they ranked 27th in terms of WRC+. So I don't think the Giants offense is capable of scoring very many runs. I think Ryan Weathers is on the elite side of starting pitchers, and I think the Giants bullpen and their pitching staff should be locked and loaded to suppress runs in Miami tomorrow. So give me the under for the third straight game in this series.
Yep, I like that look there. And personally, I landed on the Giants on the money line for exactly what you mentioned. That bullpen is so good. And, well, the Miami Marlins bullpen has not been so great. So after Ryan Weathers gets out of the game, then it gives way for a little bit more production for the San Francisco Giants. As we do have Sean Zarillo, does great work over at Action Network, joining me right here on Cashing Out on Visa, the Sports Betting Network. And another game that you're taking a look at, this is a fun one between the Red Sox and the Atlanta Braves. It's Bryce Elder against Garrett Crochet. Fair to say that there's a little bit of a pitching mismatch there, with right now the Red Sox about a minus 130 to a minus 135 favorite. You're able to get about plus 115, plus 120 on the Braves. Take me through this one, because Garrett Crochet, obviously the better starting pitcher, but this is a Red Sox team that's just in a big giant funk, and without Alex Bregman, they just have not been able to score.
Yeah, and I think Crochet could potentially get hit here a little bit by Atlanta, just because this puts the Braves in their much better split. Now, I'm projecting Ronald Acuna Jr. in. I wouldn't have if the Braves were playing Monday, but they are off Monday, and Acuna fought his way back into the Braves lineup last Sunday. They also had that, you know, funky random off day, and then the doubleheader where Acuna didn't start game one within this week. So I think it's much likelier than not that Acuna is in their lineup on Sunday with the off day Monday. So I have him in. If he's out, I'm still basically at a break-even price on this game, but I make Atlanta about minus 105 here. But as I said, I think they're in their much better split against the left-handed starter. Ozzie Albies is really the poster child for it, because among their guys, even though Albies is a switch hitter career-wise, he is a 140 WRC plus against lefties and 96 against righties. Now, Sean Murphy is going to play for Drake Baldwin tomorrow. He's a very good hitter against left-handed pitching. Riley's in his better split. Acuna and Olsen actually hit righties better than lefties, but they're both phenomenal against both types of pitching. And Olsen actually hits lefties pretty well, even for a left-handed stick. So across the board, the Braves offense, I think, does project much better against left-handed pitching than they do righties. And as long as Bryce Elder can get this game to the bullpens within a run or two runs, I think the Braves have a chance to come back and win it. The bullpens are very comparable. I probably give a slight edge to Atlanta. And defensively, these teams, I think, are pretty comparable as well. So obviously, there's the starting pitching advantage for the Red Sox. I make the Red Sox minus 123 for the first five innings, but I make Atlanta minus 105 for the full game. So plus 105 for better for me on the Braves. Again, assuming Acuna's in, but I expect him to be.
Yep, and that is certainly something to know with Ronald Acuna Jr., because he's been so productive ever since he came back for the Atlanta Braves, and that should be a big part of the handicap here. And I think that this is an interesting one as well, because Hunter Brown has been one of the best pitchers in all of baseball thus far this season for the Houston Astros. You've got a Tampa Bay Rays team that just absolutely pounded the tar out of the Astros on Saturday, looking to do so again on Sunday with Taj Bradley, about a plus 180 underdog, total 7.5. Take me through this one, because I love what I've seen out of Hunter Brown. But, I mean, really, guys not named Hunter Brown for the Astros have been incredibly inconsistent this year.
Yeah, I like the Rays and the under here. I made this line about plus 165, or I made the line about plus 150. So I'm happy with Tampa down to plus 165. And I like the under. I actually bet the Rays and the over in this same matchup in Tampa about 10 days ago. But the wind was blowing out aggressively. It was really hot. And Hunter Brown, you could see, was physically laboring through that start. Just pitching in the heat, the humidity outside. It's not an environment that most of these guys are going to be accustomed to pitching in, both in Sacramento and in Tampa in this extreme summer heat. It is very much a minor league vibe and minor league heat. And I don't know how much air conditioning and stuff they have in those clubhouses to cool them down either. But Hunter Brown was sweating bullets on that mound. He gave up three bombs in that start. Now you're putting him back in his home environment, his home park. And since Brown started throwing a sinker, he started throwing a sinker in May of last season. Remember, he got lit up last April, introduced the sinker May of last season. Since then, he's thrown 35 starts. He has a 2.35 ERA across all of those starts, including a couple of blowups in there as well. So he's been absolutely tremendous. I do think he is an ace level pitcher, but Tosh Bradley has also been very unlucky this season. Even though his season long strikeout minus walk rate is down about 7%, his past four starts, he looks a lot like he did the past couple of years. Strikeout minus walk rates come back up. I believe 24 strikeouts, four walks, five walks in his past four starts or so, but that K minus walk percentage is back up near 19%. So I do think there's value both on the raise and the under here with this dome close, especially after Brown got hit by this offense last time out. But the Rays offense being hot, I think certainly lends itself to value on the dog as well. Since Josh Lowe came back into their lineup in mid-May, they're eighth in baseball in terms of WRC+. Not only in terms of tomorrow's game do I think there's value on the Rays, but from a futures perspective, this team is very intriguing to me as a long shot in the American League.
Yep, and you've also got Jake Mangum back in the fold as well. That's the guy that doesn't hit for a lot of power, but guy that's able to move the line for the Tampa Bay Rays. So I do think that there's a little bit of upside there, and there's always upside in this show when you're aboard, Sean. You do such a great job over at Action Network, both on the UFC and the baseball front, and always do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Greg, thank you for having me as always. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Ha-Seong Kim, Shane McClanahan coming back for the Rays as well. So I think that team's really going to be looking good by the end of the year.
Oh, yeah, getting back McClanahan, that's going to be massive for them out there in an American League where it's pretty wide open. So we shall see what's going to be happening on that front. Always great to be able to get Sean aboard. And coming up next, how about if we take a look at some of the teams out there in the AL Central that are going to make things interesting? That's up next, right here on Cashin' Out. I'm Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Back here on Cashin' Out, I'm Beeson, the Sports Betting Network. Great to be joined by Sean Zarrill in the last segment, talking some baseball with him. He does an incredible job over at Action Network, so very much appreciated. And then in the next segment, we'll talk to another man that does great work over at Action Network. That'd be Matt Moore, who always gives us more. We've got a finals to be able to preview, as we do have ourselves the Indiana Pacers and the OKC Thunder doing battle. At last check, we were still holding it steady with regards to the Pacers being a 9-point underdog in game number one. That total is at a 229.5. So we'll get his thoughts on game one. We'll get his thoughts just overall with regards to this series, as right now, excuse me, I'm getting all choked up because the OKC Thunder, it's a lot of chalk. And right now they are a minus 650 favorite to be able to win this final and be able to take this on home. I know that there's a lot of people that are looking at some of these actors, and personally, if I had to play anything, I would think that this series does go six games. I do think that for the Indiana Pacers, they're going to be able to give you a relatively solid effort. I do think that they take at the very minimum one game at home. I think that their prospects of being able to take two is actually a little bit better than what some people think, but certainly the Indiana Pacers up against it. And I was mentioning before that I was seeing that OKC series price at a minus 650. Right now at DraftKings, that's actually shot up to minus $7. And if you're looking for odds to be able to win finals MVP, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, that's at minus $6. So even if you're looking at Shea Gilgeous-Alexander to win finals MVP, if you think that the OKC Thunder are going to be able to win the finals, you're still not getting too much of a discount there. So very much a chalky sort of line there. What is very interesting to take a look at as well is that this is a little bit less of a chalky line. How about if we go to baseball? Because you typically don't find $7 favorites out there, even though if you're betting against the Colorado Rockies, you should be laying minus $7 to bet against them on the road. That said, you got yourself a lot of fun out there in the AL Central, as we've got ourselves the Detroit Tigers and the Kansas City Royals happening on Sunday, as this was a 1-0 game that we saw on Saturday. And shout out to the Royals. Seven shutout wins thus far this season. We'll see if they can make it eight. 919, 920 on the card. It's Kadir Montero who's going to be on the bump for Detroit. And old Chris with a K, Bubich, one of my guys, is on the bump for the Royals. Royals are about a minus 140 to a minus 145 favorite. Anywhere in the neighborhood of plus 122 to a plus 130. That number on Detroit. And total on this game, it is 8.5 shaded down to the under. And in terms of this Kansas City Royals team, I'm going to be willing to lay the number. I don't want to go run line because I do think that this is going to be a lower scoring game. This is another one that I wrote up with regards to a VSiN write-up. I set my total at 7.8. So at the 8.5, I do like the under. But I mean, how good has Chris with the K Bubich been? And if you could tell, yes, I do like saying Chris with the K Bubich. Always a lot of fun there. But I mean, this guy has been absolutely electric. He was a former first-round pick out of Stanford. Looked like he was just a big, giant bust and a flopperoni. And really, this season has come into his own. Was solid in the bullpen last year. How about a 1.45 ERA? And he has given up just 2 total runs over the course of his last 5 starts. Guy is really doing a great job of limiting the deep ball. And he's backed up by a good bullpen. Like, this is a Royals team that all of a sudden is a top-10 team in terms of bullpen ERA. They made an offseason move to pick up Carlos Acevez, a relatively rock-solid closer. He and Lucas Cercich have been able to give you a sub-3 ERA. Steven Cruz has been solid in that bullpen. You've been having a little bit of shakiness out of John Schreiber recently. But all in all, these guys are doing a nice job. Now, for the Detroit Tigers, you're able to mix and match in this bullpen. So, even though you've got a guy in Montero who's not necessarily the world's greatest starter, 4.54 ERA, fielding independence actually a little bit higher than that, you don't need to have them out there overly long, and then they can mix and match from there. Because a lot of these guys in the Detroit Tigers bullpen are able to go for multiple innings. Looking at you, Brian Herder, who they've already utilized as a starter once or twice this season, he's supplying them with a sub-3 ERA, and then you're able to mix and match with someone like a Tommy Canley, Will Vest, Chase Lee. These have been all guys that have been able to give you a 2.26 ERA or better. You've been able to get some good production out of Brandon Hennepy, who's playing about a 3.25 ERA as well. And it is the Detroit Tigers who have by far the better lineup right now for the Kansas City Royals. They just have not been able to generate really any offense at home this season. How about 3.25 runs per game at home? Now, I do trust in them to be able to get the job done, but that's a big reason why I'm going to be taking a look at this under. Because for the Royals, you've had Vinny Pascantino, who's been able to give you 8 home runs. He's been able to hit about a 250 for the team. But Bobby Wood Jr. is just down with his production. He's still moving the line. He's still getting on base, sitting for just below a 300, but he's down to about 5 to 6 home runs this season. You've had Miguel Garcia hit for above a 300. He's only been able to give you about 5 home runs. So then guys like Drew Waters and company at the bottom of the fold, they've been able to move the line a little bit, but they're not really giving you a lot of hard contact in general. And then for the Detroit Tigers, you do have a trio of guys that'll be able to give you 10 plus home runs. Spencer Torkelson, Riley Green, and Kerry Carpenter have been able to lead the way there. And for Torkelson, not necessarily anything for the world's greatest average, but he's at about a 347 in terms of that on base. And a lot of these home runs, they have not been solo shots. They've been more like 2 and 3 run shots, with the fact that Gleyber Torres, Javi Baez have really picked it up this year, both hitting about a 275. Zach McKinstry is finding a way to be a move line as well. And then you've got Dylan Dingler, who's been a very underrated player for this team. He's been able to hit down near 300 as well. So I've been loving what I've been seeing out of him. Trey Sweeney has not been able to give you a ton for this team, but overall, it's a pretty rock-solid lineup. But Chris Bubich, I think, is going to be able to do a nice job just being able to go out there, give you some relatively good production. I very much trust in him to be able to find a way to be able to persevere, get the job done. I did set my money line more around about a minus 148, so seeing what we've got right now, I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the Royals on the money line. And in terms of this total, set mine at a 7.8. So right now we're finding that at an 8.5. I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the under as well, as this is cashing out right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And something that you want to do first is go to First Bet, because the final jewel of the Triple Crown, it is coming upon us, the Belmont Stakes. There's no better time to be able to take a look at some horse racing than right now with First Bet. New users can get a $200 sign-up bonus by utilizing that promo code of VSIN200. That is VSIN200 for that promo code. And whether you're a seasoned horse player or brand new to the sport, First Bet, they've got all the tools to be able to elevate your game. You want to download the app or go to firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com/VSIN, to sign up today. Once again, with that promo code VSIN200, that saves you $200 in terms of your bonus. A VSIN200 promo code, as this is cashing out with myself, Greg Peterson, right here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. And how about if we do dive in on another interesting baseball game that we've got on this Sunday, as we've got ourselves some pretty good action out there. And this one, I think, is going to be a fun one, as in the National League on this one, you've got yourself the Cincinnati Reds. And yes, Bill Belichick, we're on to Cincinnati. They're on the road. They're facing off against the Chicago Cubs, as James Tyon goes for the Cubs. Nick Martinez is on the bump for the Reds. And this Reds team does find themselves as a pretty good-sized underdog, anywhere between about plus 135 to a plus 140. In the neighborhood, about minus 155, minus 160 is that number on the Cubs. 7.5 is the total. Now, a lot of places have this juice up to the over, and the wind is going to be blowing in Wrigley on Sunday. It's not going to be overly bad, but it is going to be still blowing in. You're going to be getting winds in that neighborhood of, I would say, 6, maybe even as high as 8 miles per hour, but I don't think that's going to be affecting these hitters too much. So I set my total a little bit closer to a 9. I'm going to be in on the over, and this is another one that made my VSiN write-up. You got a guy in James Tatayan who's been getting a lit ablaze with regards to the deep ball. He's got a 3.86 ERA, but north of a 5 field independent. Right now he's given up north of 2 home runs per 9 innings, so that has been a little bit less than tremendous there. And it is a Cubs bullpen that has been hit or miss, I think, is the best way of putting it. The opener from today, Andrew Pomerantz has been able to do a nice job. Daniel Palencia, they both have been able to give you a sub-3 ERA in for him. Drew Pomerantz, one of the most interesting names in all baseball. Like, he did not pitch on a big league mound for like 3 years, and he's casually gone out there and has posted up a sub-2 ERA thus far. So, I mean, you love to be able to see that, but I don't know how long-lasting it's going to be. And for the Reds, all of a sudden, this has been a bullpen that's been failing them. Graham Ashcraft, he gave it up here on Saturday. He's been posting up north of a 3.5 ERA. Still have Taylor Rogers, who's been able to do a nice job. So Tony Santian has been able to give you some good production as well. But for the Reds, I think that their, shall we say, production on the road is a little bit, shall we say, hollow. And the reason why I do think that there is some deserved, shall we say, question mark with regards to the Reds and the way that they've been producing on the road is that if you look at the amount of road production that they've got, they're posting up north of 4.5 runs per game away from home. A lot of that is a byproduct of that 24 spot that they put up against the Baltimore Orioles about a month or so ago. That's when Charlie Martin was really going through it for them. Ellie De La Cruz has been able to give you a double figure amount of homers, and man, McLean is able to give you some hard contact, but McLean hitting below the middle sign of 200, that's been a little bit less than amazing for them. And then with this Cubs team, they just continue to play offense. Recognize that this series, they've had 2 runs apiece in the first 2 games, but they're still averaging north of 5.7 runs per contest. You've got a quartet of guys who will be able to give you at least 4 home runs, or at least 10 home runs. Pico Armstrong has been really that main guy with 14 home runs, but how about, say, Suzuki? How about Dansby Swanson? What you've been able to get out of them? And I do think that for the Cubs, just having the guys to be able to get on base, like Nico Horner and company, to be able to turn those solo shots into 2-run shots, 3-run shots, so paramount here. With regards to that Cubs run line, you're finding that at about a plus 135. I'm going to be willing to take that. I did set my total closer to 9, so I'm looking at the over. And what we're looking at next, the NBA Finals. It's set between the OKC Thunder and the Indiana Pacers, and we're going to be talking about it with Matt Moore of Action Network on the flip side on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We're going to be joined momentarily by Matt Moore. He always gives us more when he's aboard. He does an absolutely amazing job taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of basketball. But first things first, have to give credit where it is due, because I work with the best team here in the business here at VSiN. They make all these shows that you see and hear possible. My producer, Hunt, always does a great job of setting me up for success, and I know that he's been doing an amazing job of getting things all squared away. Along with John, he's our associate producer. He's been one of the best adds to the VSiN lineup over the last few months. He does an absolutely amazing job of making sure that everything is all orderly here in studio. And then if you're looking at perhaps the most difficult job here at the network, making myself look halfway presentable in a video / moving picture format, Jaren's along with Isaiah, they do a tremendous job as our technical directors, and making sure that everything is all squared away with regards to the odds that you see on the screen as well. They're always on point, and those guys, they do a tremendous job. And then if you're listening on SiriusXM channel 158, or if you're listening after the fact, as every single show that we do here at the network, you're able to find it in podcast form. Go to vsin.com/podcast or wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, list goes on and on. I know that they do, and I know that Chris does an absolutely tremendous job making sure that everything sounds crisp and clean. So a big thanks to all those guys behind the scenes. They are the best in the business, and because they're the best in the business, I need to give you guys some good insight, and I need to point you guys in the right direction with regards to the NBA Finals. With regards to this Finals matchup, we do have ourselves the line for game number 1, with it standing right now at a 9. 9 with the OKC Thunder being the favorite. Total is 229.5. And again, I'm much more of an in-game better, and I always encourage this with regards to the NBA, especially when you have a team that's as volatile as the Indiana Pacers, like we have already seen in each of the three series that the Indiana Pacers have had. They have had at least one game where they were down at least 7 points in the final 45 seconds and pulled it off. And that has been very much a hallmark here in the NBA playoffs. If you've been able to wait to be able to get a better number in game rather than just taking the regular pregame number, you've been able to get a lot of production there. And I do think that with regards to what you're going to be finding here in the NBA Finals, you're probably going to be able to get a little bit more of that as well with the OKC Thunder. This has been a little bit of a feast or famine team. Like, I do think that needs to be thrown in there, that the OKC Thunder have had a few first quarters where they have scored themselves less than 20 points, and they themselves have been able to just completely hold teams down. You look at that series against the Minnesota Timberwolves, when the Timberwolves, if I remember correctly, in that final game, they scored 9 points in the first quarter, and then the OKC Thunder, they had a first quarter where they scored only 14 points. So I do think that that's worth noting, and that's a big reason why I do like the under here of 230.5. Recognize that the Indiana Pacers have been a high-flying offense, but this is an OKC Thunder team that has been very on point with regards to defense, albeit it has been paired up with a really good offense, and you want a complete team. The OKC Thunder have just been bulldozing teams all throughout the entirety of the postseason. They've been, frankly, bulldozing teams all throughout the entirety of the regular season. Being able to rack up 68 wins, you know that just doesn't happen on accident. But what I think is going to be intriguing is who is going to be able to step up and maybe be some of those ancillary scorers, because you're very much getting taxed in terms of the player props in game number one. Right now I'm seeing Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is over and under for points right around about 34.5. That's just a little bit rich for my blood. Jalen Williams is more around a 21.5. Like, that's one that if I had to play an over on one of these more, shall we say, big time players, that would probably be the one. But I think that 21.5 is actually a very fair number. That's probably where I'd be setting it personally. I do think that perhaps you get a little bit more of Kasan Wallace. He's a guy whose player prop is hovering right around about 8, and he's been able to step up here in the postseason. Didn't necessarily have a bunch of rambunctious results against the Minnesota Timberwolves from a scoring perspective. He's been doing a little bit more on the defensive side of things. Like, he's able to give you a block, he's able to give you a steal. Like, he's just a Swiss Army knife guy that does a little bit of everything, but I think that he could be a guy that steps up, give you a little bit of production there. Alex Caruso is just always very intriguing as well, because he's a guy that, once again, you can just have him do a little bit of everything out there on the floor as well. And then for the Indiana Pacers, it's all about what you're going to be able to get in terms of the guys not named Tyrese Haliburton and Pascal Siakam. Siakam, a massive game to be able to get the Pacers through the finals. He stepped up very big in the 125-108 win that we saw here on Saturday, and 31 big points, was able to give you a few boards, and then obviously Haliburton, 13 assists. That was massive. But what are you going to be able to get out more of these guys, like a Miles Turner, who I thought that is just series that we saw against the New York Knicks was very intriguing in that he just hasn't grabbed any rebounds recently. Like, this guy has been stuck on 4 rebounds or fewer, and I believe now each out of his last 5 games, so he just hasn't been able to give you a lot there. He's gonna need to step up down low for the Indiana Pacers to have any sort of shot whatsoever. You've got a guy in Aaron Nesmith who he's obviously been a really good 3-point shooter just all throughout the postseason, but I would think that he gets a little bit more limited in this game, number one especially. So I think that it's going to take him a little bit of time to be able to get going. And if you're looking at his threes prop, the over of 3 threes is a +170. If you go down to a 2, if you go under 2, you're able to get plus money. I'd be looking there, because I do think that that's going to be a big part of the OKC, shall we say, game plan here. Be able to limit him a little bit more after he had just a massive series in general. What else I think is interesting is looking in terms of the threes prop market, I think that it could be a little bit of an Alex Caruso series. Like, you're able to get plus money on him in terms of over 2 threes. That's one that I'd be diving in on. I think that you're going to be able to have a lot of value here in general with regards to more of these, some of these ancillary guys. Meanwhile, I think that your mainstream guys, they're just not going to be able to give you a whole heck of a lot. And I do think that for the OKC Thunder, they're going to be able to control things down low. Like, the one thing that I'd be willing to take overs on in terms of game number one is a lot of the rebound props for these OKC Thunder guys. Like, you're looking at Isaiah Hartenstein right now is over of 8 rebounds as a +105. I think that that's a solid value. Chet Holmgren, I recognize that it's a big number of 10. You're able to get plus money on that over. That's one that I'd be taking a look at as well. Meanwhile, Miles Turner just has not been able to, again, give you any sort of rebounding whatsoever. I took a shot on him in game number 5 in terms of his rebound prop and got burnt on that, so I'm a little bit salty there. Like Lu Dort being able to give you 4-plus rebounds is something that I'd be willing to take a look at as well. And for the Indiana Pacers, I do think that they are going to give up a lot of second and third chances. I really do think that that's where the OKC Thunder are going to be able to make their hay, and I think that this is a little bit correlated. If you think that the OKC Thunder are going to be able to cover and win game 1, you probably like the under a little bit more. If the Pacers are able to get this game just breakneck, harebrain, and they're able to put up some points, I like them to be able to cover the +9 in more of an over. So if you're looking over, you're probably looking Pacers. If you're looking under, you're probably looking more Thunder. Now, personally, with regards to spread, I hold off until prior to the game, but I do think that now this total, with it going from 229.5 to 230.5, you're getting some good value on the under. If I'm looking to play anything prior to this game, I'm going to be looking at that under. And with regards to the side, again, if I absolutely had to play it right now, I'd be laying the 9 with the OKC Thunder, just because I do think that after this emotional series and the OKC Thunder having a little bit more rest, that they're going to be a little bit more, shall we say, equipped to be able to take advantage in game number 1. But we shall see on that front, as it is cashing out with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And how about if we do take a look at a little bit of baseball as well? Because I mentioned the fact that we've got ourselves the OKC Thunder. You know who has a team out there in Oklahoma City? That would be the minor league team of the Dodgers. You see how I'm tying it in there? We've got ourselves Dodgers versus Yankees on Sunday Night Baseball. How about if we dive in there? This is 9:29, 9:30 on the card, with it being Yoshinobu Yamamoto going for the Dodgers, and Ryan Yarbrough is on the bump for the Yankees. And right now, that total is 8.5, shaded up to the over. And with the Dodgers, you're going to be finding them between minus 165 to minus 175 in the neighborhood of about plus 145 to a plus 155. That number on the New York Knicks and, or the New York Knicks, the New York Yankees. I've got basketball on the mind for some reason, but that said, this is going to be one of these circumstances where I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the New York Yankees if I'm able to get anything above a plus 150. I set my money line price at a plus 153. Ryan Yarbrough has actually been really good for the Yankees, as he's been able to supply the team with a sub-3.5 ERA, and his strikeout stuff all of a sudden is up. Like, for Ryan Yarbrough throughout his career, he's been more of a guy that has been able to give you about 7.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. He's up to right around about 9 strikeouts per 9 innings this season. And for Yarbrough, when he was coming out of the bullpen, he just didn't look comfortable in general. He's been a guy that has had a lot of openers used from throughout his career, but he was being used a little bit more in long relief, so he looked like a little bit of a fish out of water. Meanwhile, when he has been a starter, he's really been able to step up. You just look at what he's been able to do as a starter versus when he has been coming out of the bullpen. 2.25 ERA in his 4 starts as far this season, filling about an average of 5 innings per start. Coming out of the bullpen, more around a 4.11 ERA, and he's been giving up more hard contact when he's been coming out of the bullpen as well. Meanwhile, Yoshinobu Yamamoto has been tremendous. He's been posting up a sub-2.5 ERA. He's been able to do a nice job, giving up less than a home run per 9 innings. He does a nice job in terms of his command. That is a Dodgers bullpen, though, that's a little bit shaky. They're hovering right around about league average in terms of that bullpen ERA. You've had the long guys and Ben Casparis, along with Jack Dreyer, do a nice job of being able to hold down the fort, but guys like Tanner Scott and company have been a little bit less than tremendous for the Yankees. You've been able to have the likes of Yuri De Los Santos, along with Luke Weaver, do a nice job holding it down. So I do think that this is going to be a lower scoring game. I do like the under here. And for the Yankees, plus 153 or higher, I'm going to be taking a look at that money line as well. And coming up next, how about if we get you guys a little bit more basketball and a little bit more baseball right here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
And we're back here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Great to be joined by this man on the Progressive Guest Line. We've got Matt Moore aboard, and he always gives us more. He does a tremendous job over at Action Network, taking a look at this great game of basketball that we all know and love. Fitting that we've got him on now as the finals is all set. And Matt, it's great to get you aboard. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate you having me on after the Eastern Conference Finals. What a playoffs it's been. It's just been absolutely crazy. A lot of fun to bet and follow, and can't wait for this Thunder Pacer series, too.
Oh, it's going to be tremendous. And before we dive in on that series, just how did you take a look at the Eastern Conference Finals with it being a wonky final, obviously, with game number one being one of the most thrilling playoff games I've ever seen in my life, and the Pacers being able to find a way to persevere and really pulling away in that third quarter?
Yeah, you know, playoffs, honestly, were rough for me, but the Eastern Conference Finals paid me back in a big way. I was on Pacers in game one, then came back on them in game two again, and then was big on them tonight. Tonight was one of the bigger positions I've taken in playoffs in recent seasons, and I really love the Pacers in this spot. Indiana has been great at home. They've been great off a loss. Their game sixes are always a dynamite spot for a team up 3-2. Everything just kind of came into alignment here. You got to give a lot of credit, I think, to the way that they built this team through the trades, but also this was a statement run from Rick Carlisle, a reminder that this is one of the best coaches in basketball. He's had every answer for every opponent they faced, and now obviously going up quite a bit in weight class as they take on Oklahoma City.
Yep, it is going to be a big, giant jump, and that's indicated by the price, because right now, in a lot of places for the series price, the OKC Thunder hovering right around about minus $7. I've even seen a little bit north of minus $7, and do you think that this is appropriate pricing, or do you think that the Indiana Pacers are getting a little bit of short shrift right now?
They're getting a little bit of short shrift based off of where I've got this series. Now, I was lucky enough that because I like Pacers so much in the Eastern Conference Finals, I was hammering Thunder over Pacers exactas pretty much throughout the Conference Finals. Just absolutely. And as we got to the end of the second round, I was hitting that as well. So I built up a pretty big position there. But as far as like what's actionable now, look, the line on this is the Pacers are sitting there at plus 540. In the market, there's a plus 500, even as this number has gone up at some books. I make it my plus 514 for Indiana. So very thin margins. I have this right around where the market is at. So it's going to be a challenge for me to figure out how to bet this, because from a basketball standpoint and how much I have these two teams power rated, I really want to go with OKC, but the market's a little bit ahead of me. So leaning a little bit towards some early looks at Pacers, haven't been able to find an angle I really like. I'm hoping to let the market settle, maybe get Thunder as a runaway train and come back the other way. I think Indiana's going to give them trouble. But the problem is, with OKC, you have to bake in two home wins by about 20 or more. Like, that's just baked into every series, is 20 points or more wins in two of the home playoff games. Now, it might be game two, game five, might be game five, game seven. We'll see what happens. I think it's going to be pivotal for Indiana to steal that first game. If you want to play Pacers, you're going to have to play them to steal game one. If they don't take game one, I do think that this is going to get way out ahead of them, I think too far very quickly.
And if they don't take game number one, would you perhaps be looking at this series being wrapped up in five? Because I just don't see a sweep for the Indiana Pacers. I think that they're going to be able to win at least one game at home. But I think the big question is, would they be able to take one game at home, or would they be able to take a full two, which I think might be a little bit far-fetched?
Yeah, I mean, if we kind of circle and we say, all right, Pacers are going to take game three. First home game in the finals in 20 years in the field house. Going to be madness. Caitlin Clark in the house, etc. Okay, they're going to take game three. And if we say, no matter what, the Thunder are taking game five, which I think is reasonable. No matter what the outcome is, I think we could say OKC takes game five. The question I think you have to get to is, do you think that the Pacers are going to be able to defend home court and beat OKC twice? Which, by the way, nobody's done in these playoffs. Nobody's won back-to-back games versus the Thunder. I don't think it's happened since either March or January. I can't remember exactly which, but whichever one of those, has been a while since they've lost two in a row. So, okay, OKC's probably getting, if you like the Pacers in game three, OKC's taken four and five. Now you got to go back to the beginning of this and just go, okay, are the Pacers able to steal game one? That to me is kind of the question. They don't take game one. I do think the series is over in five. I do think Indiana is good enough to get one game, and OKC will probably let up off the gas in one game, and they'll have bad shooting outcomes like they did in game three versus Minnesota. But if the Pacers can't steal game one and flip the script like the Nuggets did, I do think this is probably over in five.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be a little bit tough for the Indiana Pacers in this series. I'm in agreement with you there, as Matt Moore, who does such great work over at Action Network, has joined me right here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And the NBA playoffs, they are heating up. VSiN is breaking it all down. We're doing so right now with Matt Moore, and you'll be able to find more of our playoff coverage over on the VSiN Watch app. And Matt, how about if we do dive in on what you're taking a look at in particular for game number one? Because you did say that this is really going to be the Pacers' biggest shot, and right now that spread is 9 and the total is 230.5. What I think is very interesting is that total, because I don't know if you read this the same way, but I think that the Pacers' best shot of being able to take game number one is by just playing a high-scoring expose, trying to be able to get to 125-plus points and just turn this into a big shootout. Meanwhile, if this game goes under the total, I just don't see a way that the Pacers will be able to pull this out. Do you have this a little bit more correlated to where an under bodes better for the Thunder and an over bodes a bit better for the Pacers?
Yeah, I mean, the record for the Pacers in the last two playoff runs, that was one big reason I was on the over tonight, was that in the last two playoff runs, the Pacers have been absolutely terrific with the over. When the Pacers win, the over is 14-5 in the last two playoffs, including 8 and now 9-3 this season, and 5-1 in home games. But in that game one, obviously on the road, I do think it correlates to an under. I think part of this is, okay, the games where the OKC games have gone over have been games where they've turned the opponent over a ton, like the Wolves, who are turnover prone, or Denver, who's turnover prone. You know who's not turnover prone? Indiana Pacers. You know what the most underrated unit in this series is between the four, offense, defense, for both teams? It's Pacers defense. That's the most underrated unit on the court. So I'm going to lean towards, I think, an under here, just based off of, I make this under the number of 9. Right. So I make this Thunder, but I do make it more than a possession. And I do think there's probably a little bit of value on Pacers spread, but I don't want to bet that if I don't think they can win outright. So if I don't, and I don't, then I'm going to probably be on the under. That's probably going to be my best bet for game one, is going to be the under after the market pushes this up, because we're already seeing this get steamed up and up and up. And I would expect it to keep going at least for a little bit into the morning, and then more late money coming in on the over.
And then in terms of any player props, is there anything that you might be taking a look at for this game number one? Because I've been mentioning it, it does feel like a lot of these numbers with regards to the star players are very much inflated. Like with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's over-under is right around about 34.5. And I do think that I'm probably going to be taking a few unders myself.
Yeah, I think a good way to look at this is, Tyrese Haliburton unders is probably going to be a good look as far as that goes. I like the matchup for Nembhard against Shai a lot better than I liked it against Brunson. Now, Shai's a better player than Brunson, but Nembhard does a really good job, and Nesmith will be able to bother him in similar type of ways. They're both good at getting over screens, getting on the hip without fouling. Nembhard had a rough time with that in the series versus Brunson, because Brunson, how can I put this gently? Brunson flops in different ways than Shai. And so they'll be able to kind of contain that, I think, pretty well. So I do think there's probably some value on the under on Shai. As far as Haliburton goes, you know, I think probably switching actions a lot of the time, which is going to contain his scoring quite a bit. I do think this is a better series for Siakam, who just won Eastern Conference Finals MVP. I don't think that there's a great matchup, even with Dort. Siakam is going to have a lot of advantages, I think, with his skill, size, etc. So this is going to be a good Siakam series if you're looking for Pacers props the other side.
Yep, I think that it's going to be very interesting to be able to dive in on. And is there anything else that you're going to be betting with regards to the series?
Yeah, I think, well, one of the things that we'll probably look at is under on turnovers. I do think the Pacers, more than other teams, are going to be able to keep OKC from that turnover margin. And if you look at that, you kind of say, well, isn't that lean towards the Pacers a little bit? Probably. The issue here is just like about gap. Again, I think the value here in the series is going to be Pacers cover, Thunder win. Because I do think the market's ahead of where OKC is. I just have them power rated just a smidge below based off of some of the context of how these games went. The Wolves had the worst possible game plan in games one and two versus the Thunder. I think they could have stolen one if they had a better game plan. I think Rick Carlisle is going to have a better game plan. And if that's the case, now you're talking about stealing one, and that really does kind of extend the series. But I do think that there's an opportunity there to kind of play game by game on looking for Pacers spots with an inflated number, especially that game three is going to be a great spot to bet Pacers money line, I think.
I like that look. And Matt, you've done such a great job of being able to evaluate these playoffs all postseason long, and always do appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Always great to be able to get Matt aboard. And Always great to be able to know where the money and the bets are moving, because unlike other sources, our betting splits here at VSiN, they come straight from Circa along DraftKings. DraftKings gives you a nice look as to where the general landscape is, where a lot of that broader market perspective is at. Meanwhile, Circa, they're known for taking big bets from professional bettors, the ones that truly move the lines, the ones that truly impact the numbers. See the percentage of the bets versus the percentage of a handle on every single game across every major sport to helping you make smarter, more informed bets. You're able to get in on our exclusive betting splits for as little as $9.99 for your first month over at vsin.com/subscribe. And from one great guest to another, coming up next, we talk some hockey with Jonathan Davis, who does great work here at the network, here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.